All right, everybody, welcome to another Options Discovery interview. Today, I am joined by the legendary Kevin Lutherenhausen, better known as Lex Lutherenhausen or Lex Luther. Can you give us an overview of your education and career path that led you to where you are today? And why do they call you Lex Luther?
Well, let's start with the career path first, which will lead to where I got the Lex name, right? So I went to school at, I'll start in college. We won't bore you with the rest of it. I went to school, I went to Notre Dame, and was originally a pre-med student, right? And I was going to go the whole route of pre-med until my third year. And I took a class in physics, and that put the end of my doctor career. Don't ask me why physics. I had to take one semester of it, but that stopped the whole deal. So yeah. I was done at that point. I had to do my major in a year and a half, which I did do. So that was good. But I was going to go to law school. And my dad came for graduation or thereabouts and said, hey, you know, since you're a single guy and I can cover your expenses, maybe you should consider this trading thing right out of school if you want, because, you know, I can support you for a little bit while you're learning. So that's what I did. I went down to the floor. I got an introduction to who would a person who would ultimately become my partner in trading. He started me. I was a miserable failure at trading to start. So that was a good learning curve. But in the trading world, what you needed to do is you need to wear this silly jacket right here. And you had to wear a tie. And you had to have a three-letter acronym. Now, they first started the CBO with two letters. But then it morphed into three letters. So I got there when there was three letters, which is in the mid to late 80s, let's say. So my nickname in college was Luther, because, you know, Lutheringhausen is too long. It's too many letters. And everyone called me Luther. Well, when I went to the trading floor, I needed three letters. Superman was popular. The villain Lex Luthor was around. And someone said, how about Lex for Lex Luthor? And that's honestly how that stuck. And it stuck with me for whatever it is now, 30 something years, that everyone calls me Lex. So just simple, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And your dad, too, just to touch on this, is Wayne Lutherenhausen, who was very prominent and was leading the OIC for a time, right?
Yeah. So he passed away, but he was the one of the original founders in the options industry. He was with a team that created listed options in this country, created the Options Clearing Corporation, which also morphed into an adjunct called the OIC, which you alluded to. So he was on that original team who brought listed options to this country back in the early 70s. He was the longest running chairman for that company. I think it was 43 years before he retired. Yeah. So we have a long lineage in the options industry, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A long family tree in the options industry. So after your first trading role at CBO, where did you kind of go from there?
So after that whole trading thing ended is what you're asking, right? So
yeah,
I started on the floor and I, you know, just as a local market maker, that person I alluded to earlier, who was my partner, we started a company in the early 90s, I think, which became very successful. So we were a DPM, which is the specialist in options. So we had a whole bunch of posts and in stocks that we traded, options in the stocks around the country too. So it grew into be a pretty big firm. We ended up combining that with our clearing firm and sold that in 2005. And then I stayed around in the industry on the trading side for a little bit. And then we built a product called TradeHawk, which is a proprietary, it was a proprietary product that we kind of changed so that it would appeal to the retail trader. And it's, we like to consider it a, you know, a think or swim competitor. It's at the firm that bought our product, and that's where I work now, is at Tradier Inc. And they bought our product called TradeHawk. And I work in the business development and sales team there, along with the new TradeHawk, and, you know, always bringing new and cool features to the product. So that's where I am now.
Well, that's awesome. So you actually ended up where you are now at Tradier through the acquisition of TradeHawk, which you were developing with your partner in the previous firm.
That's correct. Yeah. So that's exactly right. So we were two guys trying to make this product. I got sort of tired of the professional world. It got a little bit onerous with compliance and all kinds of fees and what have you. So we said, hey, let's morph ourselves into the retail segment. So we created a product from scratch. We totally bootstrapped it. It became successful, and you know, here I am. They bought that product, and I'm working for Trade Ear now. So,
yeah. So. And that kind of leads into our topic for this week, which is not a riskless strategy, but just the tools that we can use to help better our options trading. And one of them is obviously implied volatility. And so this week's episode is about different ways to measure implied volatility and some metrics that are used in the options industry. So can you talk about just an overall how traders look at implied volatility and use it to inform their trading decisions, just from a summary perspective?
Yeah, sure. So probably the most important component for us in the trading days was understanding implied volatility. Okay. That's what we use as our governor of when to put positions on the short side, when to put positions on the long side, or be neutral somewhere in the middle. What I mean by that is the implied volatility number that you put into an options model, and all the systems have this now, right? Will give you the value of that option itself, right? So imagine that across the whole option chain. The tools today with implied volatility give you the ability to look historically at where certain term structure options should be and where they are currently. So as a simple example, let's say you're looking at a 30-day option, something that expires in 30 days, okay? And that's typically what we see in the retail space. You know, that's kind of the honey zone for people who have positions, is about 30 days. That implied volatility in any given stock is a number that you can pull out of a system, okay? It'll tell you what it is today. And the way people use it is to see what it should be, okay? And what it should be is based on some statistical analysis from past data. And you can say that if something on average is a 25 volatility, I'm just making this up as an example, and it's trading 35, it's pretty pricey relative to what it should be. And the concept of implied volatility is that it has a mean reversion, which means that it's going to stretch like a rubber band and it's going to come back to that middle. And if it stretches down in the rubber band, it's low, then that's a time when you want to be long volatility and long Vega, which is one of the option Greeks, so that when it snaps back to the median range, you will make that difference. Same on the short side, but the opposite way is you're going to be short the premium. So implied volatility is used that way to structure your inventory. And what we would do in the trading days is, based on those metrics, we would have a Vega position, which is how sensitive your options are to implied volatility changes, that would put us in an advantageous place for volatility to go down. If it were high, we'd be short it. And for volatility to go up, we would be long it if it were low enough. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it's a way that traders can look at, relatively speaking, in terms of volatility, if an option is volatility-wise cheap or expensive.
Right. Yep. And we taught that concept a lot, and we had a little university in our firm when we taught new traders, and we try to do analogies too. So you have a value for everything. Everything has a fair value. Your car, your shirt, whatever it is, there's a price that is fair. And there's a cheap price when it goes on sale, and there's an expensive price when there's very little of it left. So options work the same way, very similar. So we could compute a value for everything. And if things were distorted in terms of price value, we would take advantage of it. And sometimes you could trade two shirts against each other and make a spread and lock things in so that you could take, you know, you'd have a pretty good chance of making the money on that volatility arb, let's call it.
Yeah. And some of those ways that you measure volatility, one of which is called IV rank or implied volatility rank. What is that metric in particular, and why is it important to understand as an options trader?
Yeah. So what we do, especially in TradeHawk, has this metric. So we have an IV rank in TradeHawk as well. The way we look at it, I'll tell you that way. I'm not saying it's the only way, but it's the one way that most people see it, is each of those term structures of an option, a 10-day, a 20-day, a 30-day, et cetera. The way the model tends to work is it will look at data of a rolling 30-day option. Okay, we'll just use that as an example. So every 30-day option, it'll look back and record a value, and it'll do that over time. So your time period might be a year, let's say, which is pretty typical, or even 2 years. So what IV rank does is it takes the low value of that year, it takes the high value of that year, okay? and it performs a calculation on the current implied volatility of the option in question, in this case, a 30-day, and relates it to the high and low of the term period. So if it's right in the middle, it's going to be a 50% IV. If it's really low, it's going to be towards zero. It could be 10%, 20%, 15%. And if it's really high, above 50%, it could be 75, 80, 90% IV. So each of those numbers, and it's out of 100, obviously 0 to 100, is an indication to the user, the trader, how high or low his particular option is relative to the, where the range could be. I hope that makes sense.
Is there a stand? So for that range, right? That's kind of what you were talking about earlier with the mean and the IV rank either being above or below 50 is whether it's relatively expensive or cheap, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So you probably, you know, look at, you probably don't make much of a volatility lean in terms of your positioning if it's right around 50. There's not much edge to gain if it's 45 or 55, right? But if it's 15 or, you know, 85, that's, there's a lot of room for mean reversion and edge, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we would take advantage of. If you want to know where implied volatility is sitting in the metric of the range. And that's what IV helps you do.
And there's another metric that is also commonly used in conjunction with IV rank, which is called IV percentile. So what is this metric and how is it different than IV rank?
Yeah, it's a little different. I guess, you know, the percentile says that it's kind of like a Z-score. You know, it's another statistical term, right? And it just tells you what, and I'll say quartile, but it can be quintile or anything. It says, where is the current IV sit in the whole scheme of things? What percentile rank is it in? Is it in the 75th percentile? It's kind of like height. Well, you know, when babies are measured and they're in their height categories, they measure all the babies. And you as a specific one are measured in that whole set and you come up with what percentile you sit in, right? So it doesn't give you as good of a value of high and low per se. It tells you where most of the time, if it's in the 75th percentile, that means only 25% of the time it's been higher and 75% of the time it's been lower. It doesn't give you the exact rank of where it is. It just tells you where you're sitting in the zone of implied volatility. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it gives you the amount of times statistically on a percentage basis that it's been either lower than it is now or higher than it is now.
That's correct. Yeah, and you could, I mean, someone could say, and I've heard people say this, well, it's kind of like IV rank in a way. I go, yeah, I guess it is. It's a little bit like that, but you know, it's got a slight nuance in the fact that it doesn't tell you high or low necessarily. It just tells you that it's been lower. Doesn't mean it can't go higher. So
yeah, and it means that obviously that mean that 50 IV rank could potentially be higher than maybe people would think if they would just look at the percentile, or lower than they would think if they just looked at the percentile.
That's right.
Because it's just a statistical measure of what percent of the time that it's lower or higher than where it is right now, correct?
Exactly right. Yeah. So, and what people tend to do who kind of understand this is they might use both numbers. So in our system, you can just click on different, the percentile IV rank, and you kind of look at them together. You know what I mean? So you get a better, it's kind of better color, I suppose, of the story.
Yeah. And can you elaborate on how you would use those metrics to potentially set up a trade, or what a trader looks at from those metrics when they're looking to set something up?
Yeah. So what I see typically happen, and what we tended to do, and you really see this a lot in earnings plays. And what I mean by that is stocks have earnings, they announce them quarterly, right? Typically. So implied volatility before the earnings announcement tends to rise. And it tends to rise in that month that's closest to the earnings, okay? And the back months beyond that don't rise as much. So you have a big volatility skew between months. So one's really high and the others are much, much lower. So, you know, naturally people tend to buy the low one and sell the high one, but you can get yourself in a little situation because you get binary moves that can happen with earnings information and announcements. So the way people set up strategies in general with these is they tend to look at places in the expiry that are lower than normal, and they tend to look at places in the expiry that are higher than normal, and they trade accordingly. So they'll sell higher valued implied volatility or IV rank and buy lower implied or IV rank. And they'll set up spreads like that. Now, that's probably what, you know, the pros did a lot of intuitively. Nowadays, the retail folks have this at their fingertips, so they can position themselves accordingly based on that IV rank. And they love to use this metric, by the way. They really do. So I think it gives them a roadmap of where they're going. Again, I always preface everything. There's no guarantee, right? Just because something's high and something's low doesn't mean it's going to absolutely revert. It can keep going against you and really squeeze you a little bit, right? But people like to give them a statistical edge by selling something that's very dear and buying something that's very cheap. And they use that across term structure a lot. Within a term structure, so in the same month, you have volatility curves. That might be another episode. I don't want to get too deep here. And things get out of line within strikes. And it's the same concept as IV rank across months within a month. And it's just done on a strike level. So there's a lot of ways to look at this. There's a lot of moving parts, right?
Yeah, obviously with anything in options, there's a lot of different aspects that you can approach any different metric from. One thing that I don't know if this is true or not, but I've kind of heard that sometimes when traders would communicate the trades that they had made, they break it down in terms of volatility. Like I bought a straddle at 40 vol. Is that something that happens?
Yeah, you know, you can do that with a straddle. So, and we would talk about that within our firm, you know, the trading side of it. What vol were long, what vol were short. So, you know, we'd know that, right? And we would communicate it that way. Where it gets a little tricky is if you sell a 40 vol in a front month and you buy a 30 vol in a back farther out month, what you did there isn't the average of those two numbers. There's a different mathematical concept to get you what volatility you're actually long in this particular example. So it's a little trickier than that. So we didn't talk too much about cross-month volatility as a spread in terms of, you know, identifying it as such, probably more with straight straddles, you know, and those sort of things.
If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.